Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to be talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to be talking about fleeing religion. I read an article this week entitled, "Teens Are Fleeing Religion Like Never Before. Massive New Study Exposes Religion's Decline." And the article's by Joan Ships, and it's covering a study that claims that young adults in America are the least religiously observant of any generation in over six decades, in 60 years, which is probably, you could go back even farther, but they didn't have surveys back before. They based these conclusions on a study that was kind of headed up by Gene Twinge, who's a psychology professor in or at San Diego State. There were a couple of different Case Western Reserve University and the University of Georgia also collaborated on this project of analyzing data that was taken in these surveys, several different surveys, over 48 years. And they got the opinions of over 11 million adolescents between the ages of 13 and 18 in their surveys. And these scientists are psychology professors are now analyzing that data and coming up with some interesting conclusions. And of course, we have an interesting view also of the conclusions that they have come up with, and we'll get to that in a minute. But their conclusions, at least, were that the adolescents today pray less, approve of religious organizations less, and think religion is less important, with far more believing that religion is not important at all than, say, young people in the 1970s or 1980s. That there's a steady downward trend. Now, Twinge has written a book called Generation Me, which sounds like a very narcissistic generation. And, of course, that's the kind of terms that she used to describe young adults today as disengaged, narcissistic, distrustful, and anxious. She also uses other terms like they're tolerant, confident, open-minded, and ambitious. And if you actually put those terms like side by side, they seem to be a little contradictory. And they're ambitious, but disengaged. So that's not completely a part, but disengaged means that you're not engaged in what? The community? Obviously, they're not engaged in religion, but religion requires community. It's you know, almost every religion requires some sort of community, if for no other reason than to stay away from people. I mean, that's the ascetic who, you know, the what my son-in-law refers to as sad dudes, which are sadhus in India. They're kind of recluses and stay away from people, and he always referred to them as sad dudes because they seem, you know, hungry and dirty, and they supposedly kept themselves separate in some sort of quest for a holy state of mind. And he referred to them as sad dudes. But these terms, disengaged, narcissistic, distrustful, and anxious, seem to be really opposing things like tolerant, distrustful, tolerant, confident, so anyway, the idea of these being ambitious and anxious, but confident. Confident and anxious don't really go along. Open-minded and tolerant, they're kind of similar terms, but distrustful and narcissistic and anxious, I mean, how do these actually fit together? And she calls this young generation the entitlement generation. And I haven't really read her book, so I can't really draw conclusions. I just read this article. And knowing people who write articles about other people, they may not be very accurate in their effort to explain what Twinge is trying to come up with. But one of the things that, to me, immediately jumps out when anybody's ever talking about religion is that they don't know what religion means. I mean, they can look it up in the dictionary today, and they'll get a definition of religion, which is religion is what you think about the supreme being. I mean, that's the definition you get when you look up the word today. But if you looked up the word, you know, 100 or 200 years ago, the definition of religion is quite different. Religion is the real piety in practice. It's actually the performance of all known duties to God and our fellow man. So what's our duty to God? Well, in the Christian philosophy, the duty to God is to love God. And of course, we know that Christ says that if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And a lot of religionists today, their opinion about God is that you don't have to keep the commandments. You just have to believe in Jesus. It's not about works. It's just about believing in Jesus. So you just believe in Jesus and you're okay. But Jesus says not those who say, that, you know, Lord, Lord, or I believe in Jesus, or whatever it is your particular phrase, but those who doeth the will of the Father. That's what Jesus said. So if you're going to believe in Jesus, you got to believe what he said. And what he said is that if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. So when you're not keeping commandments, you can pretty much be assured of the fact that you don't really love Jesus. So, you know, if you're out murdering people, then you don't really love Jesus. If you're out robbing people, stealing from people, you don't really love Jesus. You know, if you're out just coveting your neighbor's goods, you just want your neighbor's, you know, stuff. You know, you want your labor to serve your desires, to pander to you. You know, give up his stuff so that you can have stuff. That's coveting. You just want that. I mean, you don't have to be stealing it. You just want to take something from your neighbor. That's coveting. If you're coveting, you're not keeping the commandments. If you're not keeping the commandments, then you don't really love Jesus. I mean, this is just basic logic. You don't have to have a PhD. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. If you don't love me, then I guess I'll find you not keeping my commandments. So religion was the performance of that duty to God, which is to love your neighbor. And so then loving your neighbor becomes your duty to your fellow man. You're supposed to even love your enemy, according to Christ. And actually, even Moses said things similar. You were given to drink to your enemy, not oppress the stranger in your midst. So those are your duties to your fellow man, to love, to do no harm. Love is doing no harm, and we'll get into that. And of course, it says the real piety in practice, consisting of the performance of all known duties to God and your fellow man, that was the definition of religion 200 years ago. Now it's just whatever you think about the supreme being. That's religion. Well, so when we say young people are freeing religion, what definition are we using so that we know what they're actually fleeing? Well, you know, if they're not engaged, then they're probably not performing their duties to their fellow man. if you know, unless somebody's redefined those duties, which of course is exactly what's happened. You know, what is your duty to your fellow man? Well, you know, you're not supposed to get involved in altercations on the street. That's the job for the police. You know, it's not your job. You know, somebody's getting raped, just dial 911. Don't get involved. Somebody's getting murdered, don't get involved. Don't step in. Just dial 911. Why? Because your duty is to government. You're supposed to call the government and say, hey, yeah, there's a problem down here. You know, I saw an interesting thing on Facebook today. Showed a picture of a fire extinguisher saying, you don't need one of these in your home. A fire extinguisher. That's what the fire department is for, right? And of course, what it was is pro-ownership of guns, because that's the same logic as the gun control people say, well, you don't need a gun in your home. That's what the police are for. Well, if that is actually logical, then you don't need a fire extinguisher in your home either. And you probably don't need a first aid kit, you know. I mean, we actually have sutures and stuff like that in our first aid kit. I don't know what, you know, stethoscopes and blood pressure and all kinds of little gadgets in our first aid kit. Because the second aid is hundreds of miles away. So we don't have any doctors or hospitals near here. And then what if you can't even get to that doctor? You know, so the fact is you do have a certain responsibility to take care of your neighbor, to protect your neighbor. I mean, the right to bear arms used to be the responsibility to bear arms. It was that's what a right meant. It meant you had a responsibility to arm yourself to protect your community, you know, against, you know, invasion. And that was a burden that was on everybody in the community. And if you refused to arm yourself, you could be ostracized from the community. They would no longer come to your aid. And most people today don't even know what real community is like, because why? They're disengaged. And they're disengaged, and according to Twins, this means that they're going to be fleeing religion. Well, the fact is the religions that you have today, what is posing as religion today, I mean, how many churches are actually fulfilling and preaching that you should be fulfilling your duty to God and your fellow man? How many churches, synagogues, mosques out there today are practicing pure religion, according to James's definition of pure religion? Pure religion was to visit the widows and sick and needy of your society, basically. And the word visiting is where the deception really comes in. Because you don't just go down there and say, hi, how you doing? You actually go and take care of the needy of your society. You provide for the needy of your society. And in order for it to be pure religion, it has to be unspotted, untouched by the world. Now, I know somebody who thinks that I'm always trying to do things for other people. Like so-and-so, my neighbor, my relative, they needed to go to the doctor, and I drove them to the doctor. And I picked them up from the doctor. See, I'm a good Christian. I'm always helping out. Who paid the doctor? Well, they're on Medicare and Medicaid. And who takes care of your parents? Well, they get a Social Security check. See, early religion of the Christians, early religion of the Jews, They took care of the needy. They took care of their parents. I mean, that's what honor thy father and thy mother really means. It means to fatten, to take care of, to provide for your parents. You're their social security. And if people didn't ever have any children, they couldn't have children, then they should spend the time that they have now, because they're free. They don't have children. They don't have that burden of children. So they've got a lot of extra time on their hand. They should be out there helping the rest of the community. See, you know, like retirement in Israel, retirement amongst Christians used to be that now I get to spend time helping others because I'm retired. My kids are providing so that I don't have to work, because they're going to feed me. They're going to house me. But I can still do stuff. So they go out and they help do the charitable work of society. They help educate their grandchildren. But you don't do that, see? You're disengaged. What you're engaged with is government. Government takes care of your children. They provide preschool, kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth grade, you know, all the way up to high school. And they'll even, you know, often, you know, if a parent dies or something, they'll pay for their college. They'll give them a Social Security check while they attend college. It's all done by government. It's not, you've already disengaged society. You've disengaged from the church. Of course, the church is disengaged from the commands of Christ. Love one another. Take care of one another diligently. Be diligent to show thyself approved. That's actually what the Greek says there. It doesn't say study to show thyself approved. It says be diligent to show thyself approved. The word that you see translated study there is not translated study anywhere else. It means be diligent to show thyself approved. But scholars like to say, well, study is more important than actually doing. You know, Jesus didn't say, not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who study the word. He said, not those who say, Lord, Lord, but those who doeth the will of the Father. You know, that's diligently doing that. Seeking the kingdom of God is seeking the righteousness of God in the things that you do. You see, we've already fled religion. We fled pure religion. We fled pure religion into the arms of the state. Over time, this term religion was redefined by men to mean what you think about the Supreme Being, your opinion about God. That's what religion is, and that's what these churches are all arguing about, is, you know, hermeneutics and, you know, what this means and what that means. But the prophets of religion, religions like Judaism and Christianity, and actually you could probably name a lot of other religions in that if you go back, said that one of the key elements was to love thy neighbor as thyself. That's that love is the performance of that duty to God and your fellow man. I mean, if you go back to Leviticus 19:18, thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. I am the Lord. Now that's Leviticus. That's the old vengeful Old Testament. It says you shall not avenge. It also tells you not to oppress the enemy, oppress the stranger in your midst, and to give drink to your enemy. And the whole sacrifice of the red heifer is giving charity outside of the community. But you wouldn't know that because you've been going to the Pharisees asking them what God meant in the Old Testament, even though Jesus said the Pharisees got it wrong. Matthew 5:43. Ye have heard that It hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But then Jesus says, no, I say unto you that you should even love your enemy. Matthew 19:19, honor thy father and thy mother. What's that? That's one of the commandments. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Matthew 22:39. And the second, he's naming the, you know, the two great laws upon which all laws are based. He says that the second is like unto it, like unto the first. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Mark 12:31. And the second is like, namely, same thing. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. There is none other commandment greater than these, to love God and to love thy neighbor as thyself. That is absolutely essential. So, I mean, what is this love? You know, Mark 12:33 says, and to love him with all your heart and with all the understanding and with all the soul and with all the strength, and to love thy neighbor as thyself is more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifice. So what is this love? How does that look? You know, I mean, Luke 10:27, the same message. With all thy soul, with all thy strength, to love thy neighbor as thyself. Romans 13:9. For this thou shalt not commit adultery. What's that? One of those commandments. Paul is telling you to keep the commandments. Thou shalt not kill. What's that? One of the commandments. Thou shalt not steal. One of the commandments. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Commandment. Thou shalt not covet. Covet. You can't even want anything that belongs to your neighbor. That didn't say steal. You just can't even want, desire, to take anything that belongs to your neighbor away from your neighbor to be enriched by it, to be benefited by it. You can't even want that, or you're not keeping the commandments, and Paul is telling you to keep the commandments. And he even goes on to say, if any other commandments, it is briefly comprehended in this saying, namely, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. You don't love your neighbor if you want to take something away from your neighbor by any means whatsoever. You don't love your neighbor. And if you don't love your neighbor, you don't love Christ. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. We're talking about people fleeing religion. And young people, supposedly, are fleeing religion. But there's hope because the religion they're fleeing is in apostasy. It's not real religion. And if you go back in history, you're going to see that over the centuries that there's been this division, this twisting of the word religion. Religion, some people will tell you that it means things bound, re legere, religion. It's from the Latin, meaning things bound. And religion is about binding people. But what are the bonds of pure religion? The bonds of pure religion are unspotted by the world, and the word world there is the Greek word that means constitutional order or system of government. Comes from a word kamizo, which means has to do with troops, organized troops bound together usually by an oath, and how you provide for them. This is what is pure religion, is to take care of the needy of your society without using a government of force. This is what John the Baptist was preaching. Share. Charity. Take care of one another. Love one another. No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. And we see that also in Luke 16:13 as well as Matthew 6:24. And what is mammon? Mammon is entrusted wealth, and we have a tendency to think that that has to do with money or something, but it means actually mammon comes from the word entrusted wealth. And the governments of the world have a system where you give them money, you actually sign up to give them money, and then they tell you how much to give, and they take it from you. And they put that money supposedly in a treasury, and they use that money to take care of the needy of your society, which is religion. Taking care of the needy of society is religion. It's just not pure religion. It's impure religion because it does it by force. And if you're forced to give charity, it's not charity anymore. If you're taking care of the needy of your society by force, you're in opposition to the ways of God, which is to do it by love, by free will choice. And therefore, you're doing the absolute opposite of what Christ said. And you're making the word of God to none effect, which is exactly what the Israelites or the Jews were doing at the time of Herod, and therefore at the time of John the Baptist, and therefore at the time of Jesus Christ, was they were starting a system of Corban where you signed up and you had to pay in. And John the Baptist said, no, we're not going to do it by force like all the other governments of the world seeking the utopia of government, which they call the kingdom of heaven. They called it that. By force, contributions. But force contributions, in order to implement them, you have to want to take from your neighbor that which belongs to your neighbor for your benefit. You have to, what's the word? Covet your neighbor's goods. You have to become a lawbreaker. You have to become mafioso. You have to want to take from your neighbor. You have to break the commandments. In order to create a system where you get to vote or choose to elect men who will take from your neighbor. They'll call themselves benefactors, but you will have them taking from your neighbor. In Romans 13:8, it says, "Owe no man anything but to love one another. For he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law." But what's that love? Can you sit in a pew and love your neighbor? No, love is the performance of righteousness toward your neighbor. You're going to take care of your neighbor. So you can't tell me you're a Christian just because you drive your neighbor to the doctor. Because that's not much love. That's great that you did that. Yeah, maybe the doctor's going to kill him. I don't know. Depends on what the doctor's going to do. But so you may be providing a disservice. But you're not taking care of your neighbor. You're doing token duty, token love. Where's your real love? You know, it's like kind of like giving your wife a wedding ring on the wedding day and then taking separate vacations. She went to the Bahamas and you went hunting in Alaska for your honeymoon. That don't work. You got to be there from start to finish. You got to be there the whole time. You have to actually care about one another. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. That's what Paul says. Love worketh no ill. Do you love your neighbor, or do you covet your neighbor's good so much so that you will send men to your neighbor's house and take his house away from him if he won't provide you with your entitlements, your benefits? Remember in this article on fleeing religion, this psychologist is referring to our modern society, the youth of our modern society, as the entitlement generation. They want their stuff. They think they're entitled to have benefactors take away from their neighbor whatever is necessary so that they can have what they want. They haven't fled religion. They've fled the religion of Christ. But actually, I can't even say that about the youth, because their parents fled the religion of Christ 100 years ago. Or at least 80 years ago. When they decided to start sending their, you know, when your great-grandparents started sending their children to public school, even though they weren't personally indigent, because Madison was for public education, but only for the absolute indigent. But no, you've just made it a practice that we're going to have public education, we're going to force our neighbor to pay for that public education, and we're going to have free education. But it's not free. You had to give up your soul, your conscience. You had to abandon the commandments, and you had to covet your neighbor's goods in order to think that it was good to send your kids to public education, public schools. That was the beginning, you know, in a big way, the beginning of public religion was public education, because that's how you take care of the needy of your society. You know, they need education. So you're going to take care of them by forcing your neighbor to contribute to free education. And if he doesn't contribute, you take his house away. You send the sheriff down there and they take the house away. They sell the house to somebody else who will contribute. And you call yourself a Christian. It's not so. You don't even have, now this took a little while too, you don't have a daily ministration that takes care of the needy of your society. Because in 1933, you decided to have Social Security take care of the needy of your society. You decided public welfare should take care of the needy of your society. And so you gave the job that used to be the church, you know, 100 years ago. If you were hungry, you went to church. If you were, you know, out of a job or injured or sick or needed help for you or your family, you went to church. You don't go to church anymore for that. And if you do, they just give you a list of public offices. And you have swarms of those public offices providing you with all kinds of benefits by taking a bite out of your neighbor, which the New Testament tells you not to do. Not to take a bite out of your neighbor. Do not bite one another. But you bite one another so you could have free school, free health care, free welfare. You've abandoned, you've fled Christ 50 years ago. As a society, you fled Christ, but you started churches. You go to churches and you sing and you say, I love Jesus. Jesus makes so much difference in my life. You know, he's taken all my sins away. Reminds me of the movie Oh Brother, where the guy says that he washed his sins away. He was baptized and he washed all his sins away. And I'm not guilty of them anymore. Like when I robbed that Piggly Wiggly. And the other guy says, I thought you said you didn't rob the Piggly Wiggly. Well, I lied about that. But Jesus took that sin away too. How convenient. Have all those sins just taken away by Jesus because you said, I love Jesus. But have you stopped breaking the commandments? Now, in the movie, they don't go into that. But I'm telling you that your churches are telling you that it's okay to break the commandments, even though Paul sits there and lists them off, that you got to keep the commandments. He even tells you not to have anything to do with people who aren't keeping the commandments. So I can't go to most of your churches because most of your churches preach that it's okay to violate at least one or more of the Ten Commandments. It's okay to covet your neighbor's goods as long as you do it through the government. You're members of a public religion. Do you know what public religion is? Civil religion. It's where you have the government perform the duties to your fellow man. And they not only do that, but they prescribe what those duties are. They tell you, it's civil religion, means the implicit religious values of a nation as expressed through public rituals, symbols, and some of the symbols are like national flag, etc., but and the ceremonies on sacred days, you know, 4th of July, as sacred places such as monuments, battlefields, national cemeteries. It stands outside the church, although church officials and ceremonies are sometimes incorporated into the practice of civil religion. You know, I'm reading an actual definition of civil religion. The phrase civil religion, as discussed by Jean-Jacques Rousseau in 1782's treatise, The Social Contract, was defined as a group of universal religious beliefs. He believed governments had a responsibility to uphold and maintain the right of the individual beliefs in a deity, the virtue that virtue is rewarded and vice punished, and belief in religious tolerance. Rousseau affirmed that individual religious opinion should be beyond the reach of government. You can see Rousseau, even way back then, was already beginning to redefine religion as an opinion. What you think about God. Well, in a way, even pure religion is a matter of opinion. Because pure religion means you help the needy of your society. But you get to have an opinion about how to do that. You don't have that under public religion. You elect some leader, and the leader tells you who's going to get the stuff and how much you're going to pay in to provide that stuff. You don't have to go and protect your neighbor, defend your neighbor under the civil religion, because civil religion, the civil government, will do that for you. The public government will, you know, come to the aid of someone being robbed. It is your church. You go to a government church. Not where you go and sing on Sunday, but where you go and get your benefits, your entitlements. But those entitlements are not provided by faith, hope, and charity. They're provided by force, allegiance, and contract. The social contract, as Jean-Jacques Rousseau wrote. In the kingdom of God, you have a social contract between you and God. You have a social, I'll say it again, you have a social contract between you and God, an agreement between you and God. To do what? To perform your duty to God and your fellow man. Feed my sheep, take care of one another. So besides writing this fleeing religion article, which basically is coming down to the fact that you've already fled religion. The religion of Christ, you fled that years ago. And now your youth is saying, well, I find it all hypocritical, impotent, of no value. Well, of course, it isn't of any value. You just go to church to justify your sin. And the preacher that can make you feel good about your sin is the one who gets the most money. He tickles your ears and says, oh, it's okay that you covet your neighbor's goods. You just have to love Jesus. All the problems in the world today, the economic problems, medical problems, agricultural problems, you know, the influx of GMOs and the infertility and dairy cows and cancer, all these things are the result of sin. And that sin, primary sin, I mean, obviously there's some of you who are murdering, some of you are killing people on a regular basis, stealing on a regular basis. If you broke one commandment, you've broken them all. If you've been coveting, you're doing all those things. I'm always astounded that people will say that, you know, right to choose, freedom to abort your child, right to choose, they say. But that almost every one of those people who are demanding their right to choose want to take choice away from you. They don't believe in right to choose. They believe in sin. They covet. They're still coveting your neighbor's goods. They don't want you to have the right. Well, should I pay into your Social Security? Should I pay into your public education? You don't have that right to choose. We're going to force you. I have to supposedly pay into your abortion. If you want the right to choose to have an abortion, shouldn't I have the right to choose whether I should pay for it or not? But you want public-supported abortion. If you want public-supported abortion, you don't want people to have the right to choose. If you want public-supported schools, you don't want to give your neighbor the right to choose. You don't believe in freedom of choice. If you want to force your neighbor to pay for your health care, your welfare, your Social Security, whatever it is, you don't believe in the right to choose. You believe in force. You don't believe in love. You believe in force. There's going to be a terrible price to pay in that lack of faith. All, you know, In the days ahead, I'll give you a prophetic statement. In the days ahead, millions upon millions of people worldwide will die because of the political, economic, and moral upheaval and collapse that the world will experience. Millions upon millions of people will die. And you'll think, oh, well, the famine killed them, you know, disease killed them, the, you know, invading armies killed them. All those things will be true, but what really killed them was covetousness. Their mental excuse that it's okay to take from my neighbor. I also put up some more stuff on why we congregate. And one of the things that I put up on that page was backwards thinking article. It has a little video posted with it. So if you look up the phrase why congregate at Preparing You, you'll probably find it. The article is morphing all the time. But one of the headings is backwards thinking. People like to believe that they're hardwired way of doing things is already the way, whether you are talking religion or politics. They want to think they're right. And the little video is about somebody who, you know, send these welders put together a bike with added a couple of gears to the steering wheel so that when you turn it to the right, it goes to the left. When you turn it to the left, it goes to the right. It's almost impossible to ride that bike because you keep your balance by turning the wheel. And your brain says, okay, you're starting to fall this way, so you got to turn to the right. And your brain's starting to fall, you're starting to fall this way, you got to turn to the left. And the problem is that when you automatically turn without going into the conscious mind, your bike does the opposite because they put this extra gear in there. Well, the scientist who was showing this phenomena decided he was going to learn to ride this bike. So he took 8 months and he finally learned to ride the bike. His son did it in a couple of weeks. But he could ride that bike. But he had to, and he says, like, one day he couldn't ride it, the next day he could. Something shifted in his mind so that he could ride that bike. His reflexes suddenly realized, I got to turn to the right when I want to go to the left, and left when I go to the right. And it worked. He could ride that bike. And evidently when he was in Amsterdam, everybody rides bikes there, and so he was going to ride a regular bike, and he discovered that he couldn't do it anymore. He couldn't ride a regular bike. His hands wanted to do the opposite. Now, it only took him, you know, I don't know what it was, 20 minutes or a half hour or whatever it was, maybe longer even. And eventually he was able to readjust his brain so he could ride these regular bikes. And people didn't believe him I knew how to ride a bike since I was a kid, but he actually rewired his brain and couldn't do it. This is what you've done. Your churches have done. They have said to you, it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods. It's okay to take from your neighbor through the agency of governments. It's okay to do that, and still you can love Jesus. You can't. That's backwards thinking. You have to, if you love God, you have to keep the commandments, including thou shalt not covet. But you can't think in that terms. You've been hardwired under a strong delusion to believe that it's okay to covet your neighbor's goods. It could take months of self-sacrificing service one to another, which is why we gather, to rewire your brain with kingdom wiring. We'll talk more about this in a little bit on Keys of the Kingdom. God bless.